Hi, welcome to the future. San Dimas, California, 2688. And I'm telling you, it's great here. The air is clean, the water's clean, even the dirt is clean. Bowling averages are way up, mini golf scores are way down. And we have more excellent water slides than any other planet we communicate with. I'm telling you, this place is great. But it almost wasn't. Hey, everybody. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. My co-host, Lindsay Loveridge, is here.
Hi. Glad to be here.
It's been 10 years since I started this show. Can you believe that?
That's so cool.
You're like, yes.
Yes, I can believe that. I can absolutely believe that. But well, it's really cool. It's a big milestone.
I'm very happy to have you here. So thank you very much for coming on by. There's a slightly new format, I think, but not really all that different from what people already expect from this show. So we're just going to get going. Lindsay, what movies have you seen?
Oh, boy. I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Did you?
I did.
Now, what did you think of that?
There was a lot of feet in it.
Sure were. Hey, wait a minute. Who directed this film?
It was, oh, man, you know, I think it's that indie director. He had that hit a while ago, Reservoir Dogs, the Reservoir Dog guy. He's got another one.
I believe his name is Quentin Tarantino. So if there's feet, on the dashboard of an old car, you know you're watching a Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah, yep, no mistake. I sat down. I expected feet. I got feet.
Did you like it?
I enjoyed the movie a lot. It wasn't what I was expecting going in, because I think a lot of the advertising tried to sort of sell it as Hollywood, but also Charles Manson is going to be here, which I've seen variations of that through TV. He's a popular culture figure.
Yeah, but he has
in a lot of media.
Yeah, and he has like 30 seconds of screen time.
Yeah. Oh, I'd say like 15 seconds of screen time. This movie is not about Charles Manson.
Nope.
Maybe the finale is a little bit, but this movie's not about Charles Manson. It's not even really about Sharon Tate.
Mm-mm.
I mean, other than on a symbolic level of what she's supposed to represent, it's mostly about Leonardo DiCaprio as Burt Reynolds-esque character, you know, having a breakdown and trying to come back to the top as a leading man while he's aging out of Hollywood in 1969. And is his handyman / best friend / stunt double, you know, getting up to no good in the meantime.
Yeah. I have to admit, like, even though like this movie is, what's the term? Problematic fave. It's got a lot of issues.
Yeah. Some of which have been in the, you know, media news recently.
Well, that's just the way film discourse goes now. But like, I thought it was extremely enjoyable, but
yeah,
then again, I've seen every Quentin Tarantino movie like 100 times, so sitting down watching this, I'm like, all right, Quentin, all right. What do you got for me? Like, and it was just his obsessions, but it's also gorgeous. Like,
yes, yeah,
they did really
beautifully shot. It's got standout acting from pretty much everyone involved other than Lena Dunham, but I hate her, so
yeah. I don't hate Lena Dunham, but it was weird to see her in this.
Yeah,
but it's usually weird to see anyone in one of these. Like,
it's actually, I think, the only piece of media I've seen her in acting. Like, I'm aware of the other stuff that she's been in, but I haven't watched any of her work, and so for me, she's just Lena Dunham. It was a little hard to say.
Hang on. Wait. What? So you hate her, but you've never consumed any of her art?
I hate her persona. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Lindsay.
All right.
But anyway, you were saying.
I was saying, so because I haven't viewed her as an actress, only as sort of like a celebrity personality, when she showed up in the movie, it was more like, oh, that's Lena Dunham, not so-and-so played by Lena Dunham, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Yeah, but yeah, just standout acting from everybody involved. Leonardo DiCaprio is totally on his game the entire time. You know, the ending is spoiler subverted, but I would think everyone would expect that going in. I don't even know if that's a spoiler. I mean, they tried to keep the ending a secret in reviews and stuff. It's like, you thought he was going to play that straight? Like, he hasn't played the last three movies straight as far as, you know, how it's supposed to end. So to speak. So.
Yeah, no, I really, so I saw that movie twice. Somehow I saw it twice.
It's almost 3 hours long.
Due to unforeseen circumstances, I wound up seeing it twice. Yeah. And it was just like, all right, Quentin, like, show me what you got. Like, and he certainly did show me everything that he has over and over and over again. Like, here's his obsessions. Here's what he's obsessed with.
It's still interesting, like, sit down to a movie like that, though, when we get so much that's just sort of, manufactured at this point, like it's serving like a larger purpose for a franchise. Yeah. And then you sit down for a movie like this, and it's like, this is a director just doing what he likes in his specific way that only he does it. And it's different than, I don't know, like 90% of the films I sit down for, if it's at the theaters anyway. So
yeah, no, it was just, I mean, it was just nice to see a movie. Like, here's a movie. Remember
There's
movies?
There's a flamethrower in it.
Hey, remember movies?
Like, yeah, remember movies?
Although I suppose that could describe a lot of his oeuvre. Like, it's...
Yeah. Yeah, they did weird shit in movies, and they used weird cinematography, or it just wasn't like the five standard camera shots over and over with a bunch of CG effects.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Like... That ending is, it's fucking insane.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I keep thinking back to it, and like the audience, so I saw it here in Burbank, which all of this is shot, you know, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes away from where I live.
Yeah.
And like the audience was just hooting, hollering, just like, oh, like just absolutely taken with it. Like not jeering, but just like shocked, which
right.
I suppose is the intended result, right? Like that's what he was trying to get out of the audience. So right.
What I liked about the ending is because I mentioned earlier how Charles Manson has become sort of this pop culture figure. It's almost like media is sort of fascinated with him and his persona and everything like that, to the point where it almost feels like he's not depicted so much as a villain as much as a sideshow thing to look at. But if you know the crime, I mean, it was heinous. It was, it's shocking and awful and disgusting. And it's one of the worst crimes that at least I have knowledge of the details of. And it almost seems like that's not treated almost with the respect that it is. So to finally see those characters like recast as, no, these are horrible fucking human beings and they're going to get their just desserts because what they did is really disgusting and awful. I too was enjoyed watching them get the shit beat out of them.
No,
<You know?
laughs> man, he just fucking smashes that lady's head. And it's really, it's like, it's yeah, it's satisfying.
Yes. Yeah.
If you don't think too much about the psychology behind it, like, and if you don't think too much about Quentin Tarantino and like everything he's ever made, which is
well true, right?
Of course, how I engaged with it, I was like, this is a lot like Death Proof, except sort of, yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of discourse around that movie, but that's because it feels a little like people just aren't used to consuming art anymore. So, you know, they're struggling with it a little bit, but it's like, yo, it's a fucking Quentin Tarantino movie. Like watch the others. You'll get it right away.
Yeah.
You know exactly what this guy is doing.
I knew I was signing up for ultraviolence at some point as soon as I sat down in the theater.
Yeah.
Like, of course.
Hey, speaking of ultraviolence, I saw the movie Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark,
which I had high hopes for as someone who wore out her copies of those books as a child.
Right.
But I have not seen it. So you're going to have to take the lead on that.
Fucking terrible. It was fucking terrible. Like I had high hopes for it because I was like, oh, Guillermo del Toro is here. Here's del Toro. He's here. And it stunk. Like it was, I think maybe the worst edited movie I've seen in a theater in a really long time.
Is there like a lot of fast cuts or?
Well, all right. So I watch a lot of movies. You're like, uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I watch a lot of movies and I know what good editing looks like. This was like just terrible shot selection, really, really bad editing. Not necessarily, not like shaky cam, not like Paul Greengrass style Bourne Identity-esque shaky cam, not like that, but like it just incompetent editing. Like shots did not make sense. And also, I don't know why you wouldn't just make that an anthology film. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Like
it seems like it's ripe to be made as like an Amazon Prime limited series, Netflix limited series of anthology stories.
Yeah, also animated. Like because the thing people remember are from those books mostly are the illustrations.
Right.
So make it animated. And yeah, that would be great. Like cuz then you could just enjoy the original stories, but this movie attempts to goosebump it, which
without the talent of Jack Black.
I don't know if you're familiar with the film Goosebumps.
My son is familiar with the film Goosebumps.
I bet.
But he's not here for side commentary, so I can't refer to him right now.
Right. So that's like an attempt to like thread all the stories together into one sort of shared universe bullshit thing. And so what it does is it takes everything and just turns it into mush. Like there's nothing there. Like the story, you remember the story Harold?
Yes.
Like just
it's one of the really graphic ones.
Just fucking ruined. Like the scary stories, like characters may as well not even be in the fucking movie. Like it's, I saw it with my friend and I was like, this is awful. Like and she was a huge fan of the original books too and was like, I don't know what the fuck they're doing with this. Like it does not work. It doesn't work. And I was really disappointed. I was really disappointed because, you know, I don't know, everything from the 80s is coming back again. So
yeah, I went to Barnes & Noble yesterday to pick up a copy of the books to kind of flip through, since I haven't revisited them since I was a kid. And there was the option of either buying like a box set with the original covers or the new covers from the movies. And I was like, I'm not getting this shit with these live action movie covers on it. Like what? No. And I bought the original copy and I flipped through it. And the Harold story, you'll have to tell me if this are all the elements there. Does he skin a dude? I need to know if he skins a dude, puts his skin on a roof.
And
just tans some human. No,
doesn't happen. No, it's not about any of that shit. It's about, so there's like a Stranger Things kind of vibe to it, where it's, or like It Chapter One, like
a group of kids.
Here's kids dealing with this. And like the premise is, well, basically there's like a evil witch who's writing these stories.
Okay.
Like it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
it's really bad.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it's the worst movie I've seen in theaters in quite a while.
Wow. Okay. Like, yeah, that's pretty bad. Because you see a lot of movies.
Yes, I sure do. Another movie I saw. It's called Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
You just saw that like last night.
I did,
right?
Indeed. It's a new movie from Richard Linklater, who is the director of such films as Dazed and Confused. He also directed this movie called Boyhood, which was basically being coronated for Oscar glory quite a while ago.
I remember that.
And
I didn't see it, but I remember talk of it.
And then proceeded to win nothing. Mm-hmm. And then what he made after that was a film called Everybody Wants Some, which is basically just Dazed and Confused 2. And at the end of that movie, it's effectively a speech about how, like, well, sometimes you don't get what you want. Like, it's about him losing.
It's about him losing the Oscar.
It's basically about him
sometimes
losing.
Sometimes you deserve it, but yeah, you just don't get it.
I mean, I didn't like Boyhood at all. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see it, but yeah. I remember, like, the talk about it, award talk about it.
Well, it took 12 years to make. So.
Oh, okay. That's the one where they actually followed a kid. Yeah. An actual kid, right? Okay.
But this one was it's being fucking pilloried right now. Like, it is just getting hammered by movie press. But I thought it was his best thing since Dazed and Confused.
And who's in that? Is it?
It's Cate Blanchett. Everyone's in it. Like, Cate Blanchett, Billy Crudup, who you may remember as the voice of a character named Ashitaka from Princess Mononoke.
Also live action films. Yeah. And in those.
Also Almost Famous. Yeah. Geez, who's Lawrence Fishburne? You got Steve Zahn. Steve Zahn shows up. Meg Mullally is in it. Like, yeah, it's a character actors on parade, right?
Okay.
It's really, really good. It is maybe the most piercing depiction of what absolutely catastrophic anxiety and depression look like in a creative person. It's a comedy. It's intended to be a comedy, but unless you empathize with the main character, I think maybe it won't work for you. But
okay,
I thought it was absolutely excellent. I felt very seen. I was like, oh shit. Uh-oh. Like,
this is me.
Yeah.
I'm watching me.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was a little much. But it's deeply empathetic towards the main character. So largely just attempting to sort of articulate, well, here's what it's like to be around someone like this, and also here is what motivates them, and here's why they are the way they are. It's based on a really popular book, and the reasons for that seemed extremely obvious to me at the time. But
have you read the book?
No, I probably will. I'll probably check that out.
They had it as on like a what do they call it? Like a turn cap on the when I was at Barnes & Noble yesterday.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's the movie Zach told me he's gonna go see.
Yeah,
like,
it's, that turned out. It's taken a beating. You know, you also kind of have to be familiar with Richard Linklater and like what he does and how he makes movies. But I thought it was really good. I highly recommend it, and it's exceptionally appropriate topic for the movies we're about to talk about.
right. Yeah, when you started talking about anxiety and stuff with creative people and like being empathetic towards them, I was like, that reminds me.
That reminds me. Yeah. Yeah. So I recommend it. I really do think people should. If you're an anxious and depressed person, careful though, because it's going to be a little much for you. You might see yourself a little too much on the screen.
Prepare some like detox time afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so those are the movies I saw in addition to maybe number 6 on The Lion King.
You can't get enough of those cats.
Number 6. Yeah, I know. No one likes hearing me talk about The Lion King.
It's all right, Zach. It's your podcast. You can talk about the cats.
It's a very, very good cover band version of The Lion King.
Okay.
And it's adorable.
it's very cute.
I've seen it in every possible format. I've seen it in IMAX. I've seen it in AMC has a thing called Prime, Dolby Atmos Prime, which is basically like, we're going to crank the sound up so loud that your seat shakes all the time.
Yeah.
They do that. I saw it in 3D. And
was it in 3D?
It was, well.
Well.
If I could have just leapt into the screen to pet the kitties,
yeah,
I would have.
Okay. I had an image as soon as you said you saw it in 3D. I'm like, I know Zach had his hands out just like,
oh yeah,
stroking the air towards yep. some cat there, like
little
aw.
Simba. Little Simba.
Some ear scritches back there.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. No. My love for The Lion King has never wavered. And I really think they did a fantastic job basically just recreating the experience, except this time, you know, it looks like
realistic cats.
Looks like real cats. All right. Yeah. Well, it's still a cartoon. Like that's right, a cartoon. Right. It's just the way, you know, it's
animals like, don't talk in real life. It's
yeah,
still a cartoon.
Believe it or not. So yeah, no, I totally love The Lion King. And it's made me very happy that it's in theaters, so I can just keep going.
You can just keep seeing it.
Yeah. Just like, all right, well, nothing to do. Let's go see Simba.
Yeah. See how he's holding up. How's Pride Rock going?
Yeah.
Is everybody okay over there?
No.
Let's go check on them.
No, it's not. Oh. Anyway, so
have to overthrow fascism yet again.
Yeah. Jeez, I can't believe I gotta fight these Nazis again. anyway, so what's been going on in the news lately?
Okay, so as the managing interest editor at Anime News Network, I am often in the news, not in the news, but you know, like knee deep in the news swamp. Well, and sure. So yeah. This week I would say maybe the biggest story is the ongoing controversy with the character designer of Neon Genesis Evangelion, also relevant to what we're going to be talking about later. So Yoshiyuki Sadamoto visited a museum in Japan that was displaying controversial art. That was the whole point of it, was like, this is artwork that has caused controversy or been pulled from.
It was about other Korean comfort women, wasn't it?
Well, there was a piece about Korean comfort women, but the overall exhibit was like, it's kind of like banned book week, right? It's all books that have been banned. This was an exhibit that was all about art that's been controversial at various points in time. So one of them was a statue called the Statue of Peace, and it's a statue of a Korean woman in traditional garb. She's got her hands clenched, and it's supposed to be representative of Korean comfort women from World War II. So for people who aren't familiar, that's an ongoing point of contention between both Japan and Korea about these women that were put into sexual slave labor for the Japanese Imperial Army during World War II. There's a side that denies that it happened at all or won't recognize it, right? So the statue was made in honor of those women, and it was on display. And Yoshiyuki Sadamoto did not like the statue. And so he let his grievances be known on Twitter. He talked about how he thought the statue was dirty and vulgar, and he referred to it as propaganda
You mean racism. That's
yes. He referred to it as propaganda from that country, which is sort of a term that is often used in right-wing talk about Korea to refer to Korea without saying their name.
Yeah.
So
rad.
So people got mad at him, as one does when you're racist. And actually, since I sent this link about the news story to you yesterday, there was a new development in it, and that is a tournament got canceled for a video game called Starwing Paradox. Starwing Paradox, it has character designs by Yoshiyuki Sadamoto, and they canceled the arcade games tournament due to death threats, actually. So it's elevated quite a bit to this point, to where places associated with Sadamoto are getting threats, and they're canceling events as a result of the backlash to his comments.
Boy, that's a lot. That's quite a lot. That's I mean, fuck that guy, though. Like,
so,
like literally,
like literally fuck that guy. Have you, No.
That's not what I mean. Like,
I know.
If you like, he adapted Evangelion for the manga,
right?
And it's not good. It's like it's missing the point.
The manga is. Yeah. It took him a long time to finish it. He didn't finish the manga till long after the TV series was over.
Yeah, but it's like, what if Evangelion wasn't very good? Well, here it is. Like, so whatever. Like,
he's also done some other notable work besides that.
I wouldn't know about that.
The character designer for FLCL.
Sure. He's very famous.
Yes, the Dot Hack franchise. He did Wolf Children, the Wolf Children movie.
Yeah, we have an interview with him that's sitting in approvals right now, like taking a while.
Right, because he was at AX.
Yeah, he sure was.
He sure was at AX, and I've interviewed him before, actually.
Really?
Yes, I interviewed. This is why the story is kind of particularly bothersome to me, like from a personal point outside of just the racism and everything, which is also really, really awful. But how it comes back to me is that I interviewed him in 2013 at Japan Expo USA, which was a horrible convention that I went to in San Mateo, California.
Yep, yeah, I remember.
It was a trash fire, but they had Yoshiyuki Sadamoto there. And he is what I would say he is the first big name in this business that I ever interviewed in my career.
Oh, wow.
So when I got that interview and I completed it and he complimented me even during the interview, he told me that I had very well researched questions. It made my little otaku heart like grow 10 sizes that day. I was like, I'm a real journalist now because Yoshiyuki Sadamoto said that I did a good interview and he worked on Ava. And so I always actually held that with me. When I got the news that he was coming to AX, I told my husband, I'm like, Yoshiyuki Sadamoto is going to be there. Do you know who that is? I was like, that was my first major interview subject. So that's what he's kind of always been to me in my personal career. And then he did this and I'm so incredibly disappointed.
But then
he disappointed me.
Yeah.
Because he's a racist. And I was like, why? For me, at least, could you just not?
Yeah. Well, he's just, whatever. It's a fucking character designer. Just like, what else? It's not going to make me like suddenly not like Evangelion or something.
Right. Because, or Nadia or any of the other stuff.
Because the guy who drew Shinji is an asshole. Like, all right.
Well, I kind of wonder if it, because he's had reoccurring work with, well, I guess not in a while, but with Anno, you know, they've worked together on a large number of things. And I don't know if this will affect their relationship or not, or
I don't know. People react really strongly to social media response, which is probably why that arcade thing got canceled. So,
yeah,
you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But like whatever work he was doing on the next rebuild is probably completed by now. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's even actively working on those. He's just credited as the original character designer. I think they've got a new character designer for those movies.
Really? Huh.
According to his ANN encyclopedia page that I'm looking at.
Oh, well then. All right, yeah, then. Well, what else is going on?
Okay, well, in more positive news, Yoshiyuki Tomino is heading to Anime NYC convention.
Man,
so
I hope he does press.
Yeah.
I hope he does press.
If you're into Gundam at all, you're going to want to go to that and, I don't know, at least sit in on a panel or get a coveted autograph, because that's big time. That's big time guest.
I got to send someone in to interview Tomino. Like, have to. Like, there's no other way to do that. I have to send someone in. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I know someone would be really good for it, but I don't know if she might have had her baby by then. So
yeah, right.
She'll definitely have
right.
Her baby.
You're talking about
then.
Lauren Orsini. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Who's been writing for us for quite a long time.
Yeah. She's big into Gundam. So
yeah.
She'd be perfect for it, but
yeah, no, there's people I can send in for that one, but like, I just hope he does press. I hope he agrees to interviews from outlets smaller than say Rolling Stone or whatever,
or Variety, or
Hollywood Reporter or whatever. You know, I hope he agrees to that kind of thing. But yeah, that's pretty exciting. Like, I wish I was going, because then
yeah, I'm sure it's partially to promote his new Reconquista thing. Right. I haven't seen any of that. Have you?
Yes, I have seen most of that. You know, it's a Tomino Gundam show. But he's gonna he's basically rebuilding that.
Yeah, because it wasn't received well, right?
No.
No. No, I'm being very generous.
No, people fucking hated it. Like, they hated it. But you know, it'll be interesting to watch him kind of remake it. Like, I'm fascinated. I'll show up. I'll show up for that. But yeah, that's exciting.
And the next piece that I thought people might be interested in, if you haven't checked it out already, the writer to the Boruto anime. They write the manga and they supervise the Boruto anime series. And they also are involved in Fate Waver Edition that's airing right now. They made some pretty interesting comments on social media lately in support of LGBTQ representation. Yeah. So initial comment was it started because someone was claiming that there isn't a purpose to having characters identify as LGBTQ if it's not directly related to the plot. And Kodachi disagreed with that point. And I think they had a really good quote, which was, loving somebody is natural, and you don't necessarily need a reason to portray something that's part of nature, which I just think is really, really nice.
Really good.
That's really nice.
That's a good one.
Maybe if you aren't watching Boruto already, that'll start sliding in there. I'd be really interested to see gay representation in Boruto. Honestly,
I ain't gonna watch any fucking Boruto, but
when I said you, I meant the audience listening, not necessarily Zach Berkey watch Boruto, but okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not watching that, but
aren't you watching the Waver show? I thought
good
you
on
the
them.
Waver.
No, I'm not quite caught up on it's been a week, so I haven't really caught up on TV anime recently. I did, however, make the terrible mistake of deciding to rewatch the rebuild of Evangelion.
No,
and then
I also
said
made
to
the
you,
terrible mistake of agreeing to then, watch it yeah. after you made that decision.
And then I said, "Hey, Lindsay, you should watch these, but you shouldn't like." And that's not because that's not because they're bad. It's because they're fucking harrowing. Let's get into that. So,
okay, sure.
The show we watched this week was all three Rebuild of Evangelion films, which they have a complicated history and have taken a very long time to come out. I think the first one came out in like 2007 or something like that.
I was such a baby then.
And then the next one was like 2009, and then there was one in 2012, and then it's taken 10 years for the final one to come out. Which I think when you watch them, it's pretty easy to figure out why it took them so fucking long to finally make the last one. But let's start from the beginning. So what did you think of Evangelion 1.11, You Are Not Alone?
Man. Okay, so Evangelion 1.11, that one is, I just finished the Ava TV series not that long ago for the podcast.
We literally just taped that. So
just taped that. And we're like, why don't we do it again in condensed format?
Hey, yeah.
Let's
put ourselves through this again.
What is wrong with us? Having finished that and then watching the movies was an interesting experience because I've seen the two movies prior on home video, haven't touched them in almost 10 years since I bought them. I had not rewatched Evangelion TV since I was like maybe 15. So it's a much different experience if you've just watched the TV show and then go right to the movies. You pick up on more things. That said, 1.11 is still pretty close to the TV episodes that it represents, except for, you know, everything's blood now.
Yeah.
So the oceans are blood. The angels scream and spew blood all over everything. And it feels like
everyone is constantly vomiting blood.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's just like Yeah, they're just like vomiting their life essence all over everything. Yeah. Like, you murdered me. Yeah. My blood is on all of you. Yeah. It's, you know, like almost Shakespearean sort of guilt symbolism, it felt like. That's what I felt like watching it. It was like, oh, this is
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's more or less the same. The second movie.
Well, hang on. We're not there yet. Okay. We're not there yet. So 1.11, I think, has maybe gotten kind of a bad rap. Well, a lot of these, most actually, all of them except the second one have a bad rap. The first one, I think it's like you'll know right away if you've seen the show and you've seen End of Evangelion, you'll know right away what they're doing, like what he's doing. What he's doing is faster, more intense, right up front, no subtlety at all. Not even for a second. The characters just state their emotions. They state their emotional state. You find out who Lilith is and what it represents in the first, like, 15 minutes of 1.11. Like, it's right away. Like, there's no mystery. It's like, here's what it is. It's just Anno shoving your face right into Evangelion. Like, here, you want it again? All right, here you fucking go. Like,
I would say the first movie is much more upfront about it's like, mysterious conspiracies that people like chewed on so much from the TV series. It's like, I'm just gonna give you that because that's not the fucking point.
It's not the fucking point. So here you go. Like, you go. Right away. Yeah.
Shinji's just like upfront about, I hate my dad. Yeah. And
my dad hates me.
And Misato's like, I hate my dad too. He was all a piece of shit sometimes.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. It's extremely direct. Like, much more so than the show is. But if you're revising your own work and you're like, okay, no, let's just cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Let's just cut to the fucking chase here. Yeah. It's fucking great. It's better. It's better. I honestly think Rebuild is better than the show.
As a whole, or are you just talking about 1.11 right
as
now?
As a whole, it's better than the show. But so after that, the giant dodecahedron just screams, like has like this ethereal human scream and then just vomits blood all over the ruins of Tokyo. Like after that.
And down onto Nerve headquarters.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Nerve headquarters takes a fucking beating in these movies.
Yeah, it does.
So. The second one was the one that I'm not trying to say this dismissively, but like it's the one the fanboys really liked. But I think that's because they misunderstood it.
When I watched 2.22, that is where it like diverges a lot and actually goes a little bit more into the, and this might be why you said like the fanboys like it more. It goes more into the sort of school-like relationship building between Shinji and Rei and Asuka. And it diverts a lot of time into, you know, Rei deciding like, I'm going to make them a happy family again and learn how to cook. And Asuka's like, me too. And they sort of do that. But I was more, I saw that more as a representation of this, them being on the precipice of actually connecting with one another. Like maybe if Gendo wasn't a giant piece of shit at that point, Shinji might have found some kind of happiness, but it's also entirely manipulated by Gendo to begin with. Like,
yeah, right. It's all part of the plan, right?
Right. Like, yeah, Gendo wants Rei to make them all dinner so that Shinji will connect with Rei, so that he'll want to save Rei when she disembodies inside of her Eva, so that he will also do that and then start Third Impact.
Yep. It's fucked up. It is fucked up. Like the Gendo is so much more of a villain. Like
You don't have real friends.
Yeah, like everything he says and does is it's so direct. It's just like, I'm using you for my own ends. Like he may as well just say that, like, which I think at some point he does. It is fucking nuts. And at the end of that movie, like, so I've had conversations with people where they thought that, oh, well, Shinji, you know, he has agency in 2.22. He finally
is the illusion of agency.
He's just being fucking manipulated. He's still obviously being fucking manipulated, and he's making the wrong choice. Like, he's doing the wrong thing. You cannot advance, right? Like,
yeah,
he's fucked up. And like the scenes at the end of that where he's like, his hands are out and he's just like screaming and crying and trying to like reach in to save his friend.
Trying to tear Ray out of a womb, and, essentially.
Right. And Ray is just like, don't do it.
Because she was probably at least, no, I don't think she was aware of the machinations going on.
It seems like she always is. In these movies, she is much more self. Like, I really prefer Ray's characterization in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Which are the result of Anno growing the fuck up and getting married to Moyoko Anno, who changed him completely as an artist. That characterization is very different from the way it is in the show.
Yeah.
Like, she's not portrayed as a fetish object. She's not portrayed as the, you know, the famous term premium girl. Ray is just like exhausted. She is just fucking tired, and she has a lot of issues with Gendo. So, and it's portrayed much more directly that way. Like, I thought it was a much better characterization. Like, oh, okay, I understand this character now.
And Asuka is also a lot different in this movie too, as far as being more honest about her own feelings. They've removed her sort of romantic infatuation with Kaji completely. Like, that's not present at all.
Kaji's not in it. Like, for like
he's
five,
barely.
It,
yeah,
he's like 5 minutes, and they cut it down to basically like, oh, he had kind of a thing with both Ritsuko and Misato at one point,
and he delivered Adam to Gendo and was like eavesdropping on. He was, you know, doing intel shit.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. But there's none of that like Three's Company bullshit with him and Asuka and Misato from the TV show. None of that. That's not there anymore. That's gone.
Right.
Which I think dovetails with the emotional maturity that Anno has clearly found. It seems like that's where it's coming from.
Do you think it's a decision by him or marketing, though, to make the fan service in 2.22 is much more.
So
more.
Mari is okay. So that's a good question. Right. You see some boobs bouncing and stuff. Like, all right.
Well, there's more overt nudity too, as far as like on Asuka's part and things like that. There's.
I mean, sure, but she like jump kicks Shinji. Like, it's. It didn't really seem like exploitative to me. It seemed like, well, all right. Like,
it wasn't like so bad that I found it in incredibly poor taste, but it was present enough that I noticed like, oh, that camera angle's a little, I don't remember that from before. Or, you know, it's just sort of stuff like that. I know Mari, they've got her titties bouncing around in like the third movie, but it wasn't so much her. I noticed it more with Asuka,
so
actually.
What did you think of Mari as a character? Because this is a little controversial.
Okay, I don't know if my opinion's controversial, but I feel like they created her just to take some of Asuka's stuff and put it on her.
So
they split up in 2.22 a couple, like some of the events, and reassign them to different characters. So Mari gets some stuff from Asuka, but Rei gets some of Toji's story. So
exactly. That stuff is, boy, it's hard to watch. It is hard to watch. Like, when the song starts and it just, you know, Evangelion 01 goes berserk and just starts, like, that shit is insane. Like, it's no wonder people responded so strongly to this. But Mari is, in my opinion, Mari is a bad guy. She's sort of amoral, doesn't have any principles or ethics, literally says at one point, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens when Fourth Impact starts. So,
Like, she's like along for the ride or something.
Just fuck you. Like, Mari sucks. Like, it's not, but that's not because it's a bad character. I understand what she's intended to represent. She's a tool of, I mean, Mari is basically a tool of capitalism. Like, she'll just, you know, whatever thrills her, she'll show up and do it. Including destroying what's left of humanity, which right. is like, all right, well.
I was also a little touchy about, obviously Asuka's my favorite, she's who I keep talking about, but they removed her backstory as well. I don't know if they're expecting you to just sort of know it because it was in the TV series, but you don't get any of her backstory with her parents and things like that.
I don't know, the doll's there.
The doll is there as like a visual, like if you know her backstory, you know the doll, well, and I think, you know what the doll is, but that's about it.
Yeah, I don't know. They did not take her backstory out. The doll is there, so they are kind of, they are basically like, and I was like,
they're acknowledging it visually without spelling it out.
I think that's reasonable. If you went to see like Rebuild of Seinfeld, they would
why Seinfeld,
they would probably assume that you've watched Seinfeld, like
right
you know, okay. They would probably assume that you've seen this and it's condensed. These movies are like 90 minutes long, so
yeah,
it's faster, shorter, more intense, and there's a lot of assumptions being made that you already know some of this stuff,
right.
But here's how we're fixing it. Here's how we're changing it, you know? But yeah, like Asuka's characterization is also significantly better, I think, in these movies, especially in the third one. So the end of 2.22, Shinji is like, hang on. No, I'm going to do it. And it's like,
I'm going to save my friend.
Stop. And then the third one comes out.
And it's so that's a complete branch. I mean, that's branch off.
You know that movie? You know that movie, The Last Jedi?
Yes, I know that movie.
3.33 is The Last Jedi of Evangelion. Absolutely. Okay. Blows the whole thing up. Just there ain't nothing left at the end of that. Like, this is completely uncharted territory.
Right. I mean, its divergence point is somewhere from the TV series, right? Because Shinji noped out in the TV series for 3 months. He, you know, got inside of his Ava and disassimilated, and all of his clothes are still there, and they couldn't get him out for 3 months. Well, but in this one, it's 14 years.
Yeah. By the way, thematically, Anno figured out a way to make the characters 30-year-old teenagers.
Right, yeah, he did.
Which is...
It's a curse.
It's as direct as you could possibly be. Like, Shinji is a literal man-child now. Like,
and it's also like a commentary to the audience. It's like, guys, watch the original TV series. How old are you now?
Yeah.
And you're so fucking emotionally stunted. Come on. Get with it. Grow up.
Yeah, totally. And that movie, 3.33, which I notoriously defend as very, very good, and I still think it's really, really very good. It opens with Misato, who now has, this is a complete divergence, like it's not at all like the show. Misato has an Evangelion powered fleet that she is using to stop Gendo from doing it again. Like,
right,
end of Evangelion had already happened at that point. Like, it's already happened. They've been through it. And Misato was like, never again. Fuck you. And so she has this fleet full of mostly women.
I think it's also, a semi-important detail for the end of the movie that the Ava that she's using to power her fleet is Rey's Ava.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the first, like, 20, 30 minutes of that movie, what she does is, they find Shinji's, basically his comatose body spinning around in a crucifix shaped coffin out in the middle of space, and they pull him in.
It's just so much.
Yeah, it's so much. And they pull him in. Misato pulls him in and then puts an explosive collar on his neck and says, "Don't fucking move. Do not move.
Hate you. This is all your fault.
Don't ever get near. You're not going to." She tells him, like, "You're not going to do anything. You're not going to do shit. Don't get anywhere near that fucking robot. Do not do it.
You idiot.
You Yeah, you fucking moron, don't do it. Because if you get anywhere near your dad, it's going to get terrible. Like, you're definitely going to make shit worse. And so he does.
Yeah. So I think Third Impact happened for the most part. The spear goes through it at like the end of 2.22, right?
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be the idea that Kaworu stopped it. And so Shinji is staying in his isolated room where the floor looks like blood, which has got to be completely intentional. It's the same exact shade of red.
Yeah. Sorry. Of course it's intentional.
Of course it's intentional. And he's like, well, if I can't do what my dad tells me to do, if I don't have any purpose, then what am I going to do? And Kaworu's like, let's make art.
Yep.
Let's go make some art instead of doing what your dad says. Let's play the piano. And he's like, I'm not any good at art. And Kaworu's like, well, you don't have to be good at it. You just have to make something that you like. And you only have to get better at it by continuing to try.
Isn't that good? That's so good. Like,
yeah. And they make beautiful horse music.
And that is such a gorgeous sequence. It's so nice.
Yeah.
Like,
they're running together free as horses just across the sky.
Right.
Unbridled by expectations of the adults and mankind.
Kaworu falls in love.
Yeah.
And he had a purpose. He thought he had a purpose, but he falls in love instead. And he's like, that's all right. I got you, Shinji-kun. I got you.
I'll fix your tape deck for you, but don't listen to that music anymore. You're just playing over a horrible time in your life in your head. Forget about that. Put it away. It's your dad's tape player. You don't need it.
Yeah. And then the end of that movie is fucking insane. What happens is Shinji and Kaworu pilot there's an Evangelion that they're using that has a double cockpit.
Yeah.
And they descend into Terminal Dogma.
Into hell.
Into an ocean of human skulls that Gendo is responsible for.
Right. And they're like, we're going to get these two lances and we're going to bring a hope.
Yeah.
We're going to do an impact, but this impact is going to, it's going to undo all the violence and it's going to bring hope to everything. And this is about the part of the movie where I started to get frustrated.
Really?
Yes. Because
fucking Shinji.
I know again, this is like kind of the point, but no one would fucking communicate with each other. And if people would have just communicated in that moment, then Shinji maybe would have understood. And then he wouldn't have pulled the lances out and Kaworu's head wouldn't have gotten blown off.
So this is what happens. This is what happens. Shinji's like, no, I could fix it. Let's do it. And Kaworu's like, no. No,
I've got a bad feeling about this. This doesn't seem right.
No, you know what? He's like, you know what? I fucking can't. I cannot. We shouldn't do this. Don't do this. You're a sweet boy. Like, we don't. Let's not do this. We can't do this.
At this point, he's still acting out what Gendo wants him to do. Right. That's the whole reason Rei is coming with them as their backup. He's like, oh, she's just backup.
It's right.
Like, no, they need her for this right to, fuck everything over again. That's why she's there.
Yeah, exactly. And so what happens is they're about to do it, and then Asuka comes in like a fucking wrecking ball, just like right from the left, like, don't you fucking do it, Shinji. God
you
damn
stupid
it.
Idiot.
And she tries her hardest to just kick his ass. Like, just like, don't you fucking stop it. Stop it. Like, you got your fucking daddy issues. Stop it. Like,
right.
They're desperately trying to stop him. Like, I don't see how the art could be clearer. I don't see how it could be more direct. Like,
but I feel like every time Shinji makes these mistakes, like he did in 2.22, and as he does at the end of 3.33, it's almost out of his own ignorance for like the larger world of what's going on.
Yeah, he's traumatized.
And no one will tell him.
He's a traumatized boy. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to get through to someone like that when you're in that kind of, have that level of depression when you've been that abused by your dad. It's hard to get through to someone like that. And Evangelion doesn't fuck around. Like, it's not taking it easy on you. So, like, what he does is he basically has a husband at this point, and his husband tells him, like, don't do it, Shinji. We can't do it. Nope, we can't do this. And then blows his own fucking head off in front of him.
Yeah.
And then Shinji does
it. God, I think even one of the other characters, I don't remember if it's in 2.22 or 3.33, they refer to I think it's Asuka having this yoke around her neck, how she could do it without this yoke around her neck or whatever. And then you get into 3.33 and Shinji's got a literal yoke around his neck,
yeah,
preventing him from acting. And Kaoru's like, no, just let me take that from you.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'll take the burden.
Because he falls in love, right?
But that was also part of Gendo's plan, because he wanted Kaoru to take it from him because the necklace gets...
Fucking Gendo.
It gets infested, but an angel like latches onto it,
right?
The necklace, and that's when it like blows his goddamn head off.
No, Kaoru chooses.
He sees like the angel is in it, and then decides to initiate the self destruction on it.
That's what happens. He says, "We can't do this. I gotta go," and he blows his own fucking head off. Like, it's really direct. Like,
it is, but it's an interesting juxtaposition too, because in the TV series.
Yeah, well,
Shinji had to do that to him.
Yeah, so right. It's a reversal.
Yes,
it's a subversion.
Yeah,
it's a total subversion. Actually, thematically, it's a subversion of what happens in the TV show. And then, so Asuka comes in and is like, "Don't you fucking do it! Don't you do it!" And he does it.
Yep.
And then at the end of that, but they stop. They manage to stop him this time.
Right.
And then at the end of that movie. Asuka's like, Shinji is just so. I don't know if you remember from the end of Evangelion.
I bet I do.
Where Misato is dragging Shinji's body.
Yes. Yes. So Asuka does that to him.
That's what Asuka's doing. She's dragging him around. It's just like, God damn it, get the fuck up. Like,
yeah, I think you're visually supposed to make that connection. Like, they do that earlier in the movie, too, because when it opens, when 3.33 opens with Asuka fighting, a lot of the. Shots and angles and movement in that is very similar to her fight from End of Eva when she was fighting off the mass production units.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So she just, you know, at the end of that, they leave his tape player in the sand, in the bloody sand.
Ray pick it up though? Or does she,
no.
or do they, okay.
If he needed you to see that, you would have seen it.
Yeah.
If he needed you to see Ray picking it up, you would have seen it. Now,
well, she looks at it in the sand and pauses.
She looks at it, and then they don't show you picking it up.
Okay.
And it's I don't think she picked it up. And
okay.
Now I know this is a point of contention, but
oh, it is okay.
I don't like it. There's a reason at the end of that movie that he wouldn't have the tape player anymore, and they are wandering off and are completely disconnected from all three characters, our heroes, all three. Completely disconnected from the adult world.
Yeah.
They don't have any communication, and they're wandering off into the desert alone. For the first time in the franchise history, these characters are not able to be controlled by adults.
Yeah.
So thematically, that's important. That's important. Now, if Ray picked it up...
That would still be a connection to the adult world, right?
It would still be. So
yeah.
I guess I'm hoping that that's not like, you know, 4.44 or whatever won't open with her handing it back to Shinji, because it'll, you know, that'll represent like that's a talisman for his dad. That is
right.
That is his connection to his father. So if the point is we're blowing this shit up, then it makes a lot more sense for them to wander off into the desert. And, she, you know, Asuka says, like, well, we don't have any communication here. Like, we can't communicate with anybody out here.
Yeah.
And
they're supposed to be wandering towards somewhere where the Lillin, humanity, can pick them back up.
Sure.
But she also says something that I think kind of implied that the adults wouldn't be able to survive on the surface either.
Right. Exactly. So
it's just for the children.
No more adults. Which is that's an enormous fucking subversion of Evangelion. Like,
right? Because is there a good adult in Evangelion anywhere?
No,
no.
I mean,
no.
Misato.
No.
Misato.
She's trying. I don't know if you'd say she's good at it, but she's trying. She's,
well, I have, you know, my take's a little different. Misato really is trying.
Yeah.
She's literally doing her goddamn best to stop Gendo.
Yeah.
IMO, that's a good person.
Right.
But Eva 3 really it really fucks it up. It's really just like, not in a bad way. It subverts it in a good, yeah, in a good and exciting way. I really like Rebuild. I think it's, I mean, obviously, but like that, it's really good. What did you enjoy it?
I did. I mean, I found some parts towards the end, like, kind of frustrating. And I think I understand why. And that was, I already talked about that. It was just about, like, God, talk to each other. But again, that might be kind of the point.
Lindsay, you're watching Evangelion.
Yeah, I'm watching Evangelion. I'm like, why won't anyone just talk about their problems and work this out?
Because it's not what they do.
but I think, I also think I have an idea of why it was rejected too. And I think it's because the characters aren't acting how everyone expects them to anymore.
Well,
right?
but like
people who get really upset about this particular movie, the only thing I could think of why you would have such a like strong visceral reaction to like hating it would be because Asuka isn't the Asuka you know anymore, and neither is Rei, and neither is Misato. And
I don't know. You know, I disagree with that. They are,
yeah,
they are the same characters. They are like Asuka shows up, kicks ass, has terrible fucking issues. Like Misato is different, but you understand, I think, why she's acting the way she is. Like they justify it with the story. Like,
sure.
It's just not like, this isn't what I remember is not a valid. That's not valid. That's not the way.
No,
that's not the
no
way,
it's not. That's not I the understand way, it. I'm not saying it's is. Valid, but I kind of understand it.
But that's Asuka, not the, yeah, it's not the way art works. And it's certainly not what you should have expected from Anno. Like, right. Definitely not.
Because the characters originally, even through all of it, I feel like the merchandising and everything that was birthed from the TV series is latching on to like the childish appeal of the female characters. And I feel like that's gone in 3.33, but I mean, in service of a better story, but it's not there anymore. And so if you're someone who has been, if Asuka is your waifu, she's not your waifu anymore in 3.33.
Why would like that shit? Honestly, it really gets to me that like I understand the merchandise. I get it. I know they sold it really hard on that stuff, but those characters are traumatized kids,
right?
So why would she be your fucking wife? It's a trauma. This poor fucking kid is angry as hell as a result of having to watch her mother commit suicide.
Listen, I'm not gonna try and speak for the straight male species. I don't fucking get it.
It's like, get like, watch the art, like put your head inside of it, try
Please.
To understand it, you know, like try to get it.
They found her like half dead in a bathtub. I mean, what why are you latching onto that in that particular way? I don't,
it's so fucked up. Like,
yeah,
but those, you know, I don't know. Yeah, anyway, Rebuild, it's good. Shit, it's good shit. Like, this is the good stuff. The only thing is, like, I really would say, like, do not back-to-back them, because it's rough stuff.
Yeah. I did not back-to-back them. Good. So.
That's just my recommendation. If you're going to watch these, which apparently some of them are going out of print, so it's going to start mirroring the TV shows inaccessibility here.
Yeah, you might want to snap those up now.
Snap them up, and Don't watch them all at once. It's not something to be marathoned, because each one is so fucking emotionally intense that it's hard to get through it. It's like, oh my god, oh my god, all right, okay, they're gonna vomit blood all over everything all over again, like,
yeah,
what's happening now, Jesus Gendo, like yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously an enormous fucking fan, so maybe that's just my take, but I'm really excited. Like, the new one's coming. We're gonna get
yeah.
it. I'm gonna have
June 2020 is the
yeah
is, and I mean, I hope it comes
coming.
Out on time, because he's already lined up to make Ultraman. So
yeah, well, we'll see. But like,
yeah,
can you, like, what the fuck is he even gonna do with the end of it?
Well, like, I mean, there can't be anything in it that, I mean, there might be more visual references to other parts, but like, it's completely new territory. I'm interested to see where it goes. I have hopes. I have hopes that our three children just fucking slaughter all the grown-ups and retake the world for themselves or something like that. I don't know if that's what he'll do, but that would make me happy.
Yeah, totally. Like, that's kind of what I'm hoping for. And also, it would mirror some of the themes from Anno's more recent stuff, like Shin Godzilla is a little like that. You know, like retake the world for the young. Like,
yeah.
You know, basically, fuck you, baby boomers. Like, fuck off. Which is effectively, for him, it's effectively, fuck me. Fuck me.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Get me the fuck out of here.
And the bureaucracy.
And the bureaucracy. You know? Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, if that's what he's generally interested in expressing.
Right.
I mean, if
Nerve and Seal are supposed to be anything like his opinion of the Japanese government and Shin Godzilla, you know.
Well, yeah.
Fuck them.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man. Well, anyway, thanks for participating in that. And putting yourself through it.
What are we watching next week?
Well, in 2 weeks, we have a little show called Fushigi Yugi that is coming up next.
I'm gonna enjoy that one. I have seen the series. It's been a long time. We're not doing any of the spinoff stuff, though, right?
No,
OVAs. Yeah,
no, I know. We don't have time for that. Jesus, no. how much shit are we gonna watch? Like,
nobody's got time for that.
Also, those are crappy. So let's just watch the show and we'll have a conversation about that in about 2 weeks. But anyway, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on by. And
hope to be here weekly for here on out.
Yeah, well, yep, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, happy 10 years.
Yeah, happy 10 years, Zach.
Okay, that's our show. Thank you all for listening for so long. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes or any other place that we're at. You know, all the shit. leave us some comments and questions. We always love them. We'll see you all next time. Thank you.